Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Reliability Boombox, proudly brought to you by Reliability Extranet and Group of Companies. We're here today with our lovely co-hosts, Seven, aka Peter Horsburgh, and myself, Dane Sullivan.
Hey, everyone.
For another little fireside chat on all things reliability, maintenance, engineering, processing, and so forth. So, welcome back, Seven. Good to have
you here.
Thank you very much, sir. I thought today we'd have a little chat about continuing on with the theme of the problem solving or RCAs and with the machine learning. But we're going to have a little look at who. So who is suitable? Who could benefit from these tools? We like to keep the reference of tools in the toolbox.
Yes, tools in the toolbox. Perfect.
Let's start with RCAs or problem solving, as we like to sort of categorize it. And let's go on with who could benefit with this tool in their toolbox.
General answer, everyone needs to solve a problem. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah.
But more specifically, I think the people that are affected by the problem. Right. So a problem wouldn't be a problem unless it had some sort of an effect. Okay. Yep. And, you know, the people that are suffering the effect of the problem would be, you know, the ones that obviously they're suffering the effect. They should be the ones that sort of trigger the action, essentially.
Yes.
And and trigger the demand or need to solve this problem, because obviously it's causing them pain. Now, they may choose to delegate the actual process of the problem solving to someone else, but in the who coming into the who, they should own the problem, because obviously it's affecting them. They should own it and drive the process through to resolution. And and just to clarify, when I say drive, it just make sure that it gets done. Like, it's not a huge overhead where you need billions of people to manage the process. Like, an individual can do it. The who can do, say, problem solving? Well, the answer is generally everyone. Doesn't necessarily have to be the technical expert, and in some cases it could be to your advantage to have someone that's not a technical expert in the particular subject area. And you know yourself there, Dane, as being a reliability person, or in the maintenance and reliability world, you've got to be a generalist. And you've sort of got to have an appreciation of stuff. But then, you know, I've seen cases where, school teachers seem to be really good facilitators. And I've been postulating, because my wife is a school teacher, and, she asks me all these questions. So they're really good at asking questions. That's their job, and that's a technique that they use. And there's been a lot of facilitators that I've seen out there that are school teachers, and they're really, really good at it. Not necessarily an engineer or a technical person, but really, really good at asking the questions. So loaded a few things out there. So people that are really good at asking questions and really good at the process, and you don't have to be the technical expert. Sometimes it could be to your disadvantage, because you're sort of not stepping through the process. You're seeing the end, and that's where your mind's at. So, in some cases, it is great to have a technical person do the stuff and see it through. But again, it's sort of, as I said, anyone. it is open. Open to anyone. The main thing is that you do it. And when we're not talking thousands of hours of effort or anything like that. It can be turned around in an hour. Just step through the steps. Less than an hour. Yeah. Does that answer the question? I think it does.
It certainly does. And yes, I did know the answer. And it was more for the audience's, an appreciation. And I think you're right. From my view, everyone can benefit from a problem-solving framework, as we've discussed. It's more of a framework than a process. It's an understanding. And I think anyone in business, in organization, can really benefit from such a thing. Yeah. Understanding that framework can be done on many different levels. Mm. And what I like about the framework that we use, this is not all just about the Sologic framework, because there are some really good other tools out there and other frameworks that work very well. But having a framework that everyone in the organization can understand, that is involved and that is simple to follow.
Yeah.
I like the way you brought in that, it's key that whoever's influenced or involved in the...
Yeah, the person that suffers the pain.
Yeah, the person that suffers the pain. That's the phrase I was looking for. The person that suffers the pain of the incident is the one that really should drive it. But like you said, it's not necessarily them that should do it.
Mm.
So I'd like to go dive away from the reliability and maintenance for a second, just to try and work on an analogy or brainstorm a bit of a process.
Yeah.
To really bring an awareness to the fact that this suits any kind of industry, any process or so forth. So let's take, McDonald's, probably one place I've never eaten for a long time. We'll never eat that again, but I worked at McDonald's, so we understand that they have processes. They make their burgers in a certain pattern. They do things in a certain pattern. Now, if they were to have a major incident, say a boy burns his hand and it's significant.
Yeah.
They could use a Sologic framework or a root cause analysis problem-solving framework to understand why it happened.
Yes. Yep.
What actions could be taken to solve the problem so that it didn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the person that is affected by this is obviously the young man working and the other young workers in that environment, because it may be a risk of them doing the same thing. Now, obviously, to cook burger patties and other things, you need hot surfaces and you need hot things.
Yes. Risk.
Risk. There's a level of risk.
Yeah.
Now, the manager of the store is someone that could be, or the managers, or that crew manager. I don't know how they operate now, but the guy that looks after the staff in the kitchen.
Yeah.
It would be very important for him to drive this process.
Yes. Yeah. When I say someone that's suffering the pain. Not necessarily in this case here, the person that was injured obviously has suffered physical pain as a result of the injury. Okay.
Yep.
But from where you're going here with the manager, there's a certain amount of pain that the business suffers as a result. And obviously the manager is an agent to the business.
Yes.
If you want to call it that, an agent inside the business, or the manager as a result will suffer some sort of pain, whether it is a loss of time.
Yes, loss of time.
Now diverted onto something that is essentially unplanned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loss not sure of staff about costs. Staff, costs process, of, costs.
All those things can be associated. And evaluated in this framework, and that's what's nice,
because
you can actually evaluate all those additional costs. You can evaluate the work cover costs, you can evaluate the hospital costs, the doctor's fees and things like that, and the cost on the business and where they sit in the situation. Now, if we just talk about then who could be involved in the RCA, so if you've got the manager, there's the one that's going to drive the RCA. It might be important that he understands the RCA process, understands that there is a framework, understands how it goes together, but also understands the reporting process of that.
The result, the end result, and how the output looks. Yeah.
And then in that team to investigate this RCA, in my mind, it would be very important to have a couple of key people.
Yes.
One might be, say, the supervisor or the shift supervisor or shift manager. So the person that's in the kitchen with that team of young men regularly, that knows the process for making that burger, knows the process for operating that grill or whatever this young man has harmed himself on.
Done.
One or two of these members of team, one of these two young men that have actually been involved and use the machine regularly, because they're the ones that operate every day. The the store manager doesn't necessarily use it.
That's right. That's right. I'll just draw some, because we can draw some pictures here. So we've got our manager.
We can draw some pictures. Yeah.
So we got our manager. We've got our supervisor that works for the manager. And then we've got our person that was injured. I might do him in red. Right. Yep. This is just to help us. So this is, say, the injured person.
Yep.
And we've got our supervisor here. Yep.
And then I think someone else that could be involved, and like you said, is an outsider, either third party or maybe someone that doesn't generally work in that area.
Maybe absolutely.
It's the cleaner that has a bit more experience and has been around a little bit longer. Maybe it's one of the front desk services.
Front.
Counter.
Yeah.
Counter. And I think it's really important that they could actually bring in a different view. And what is nice is when you have a framework, even if these people aren't necessarily trained, like the young man that's been injured, the cleaner, even if they hadn't been formally trained in the process, yet you had the supervisor or the manager that was trained in the process and capable of facilitating this really well.
Yes.
You can ask the right questions to get a solid solution.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the key. I think you just nailed it there, is asking the right questions. And the question, and this is where like a problem solving framework comes into it. It's asking the right questions at the right time.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. And I think people that jump to conclusions, right, may not be asking the right question at the right time. In fact, they're not asking a question at all. They could be just simply giving a statement. But in their mind's eye, they may be asking the question at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Where you haven't, you know, I'm going to use the IT analogy. You haven't got all the data.
Yes.
You haven't got the full picture of what's happened at that part of the process. So, you know, I think, you know, the first step of a Sologic is collect the evidence. So collect all the stuff that you know about this, right? Yeah. Once you've collected all the evidence, then you do the problem statement. Because you've collected the evidence, you now understand to a degree, not a complete understanding, but you now understand all the different touch points of this particular problem. And then you're in the best point to do a problem statement. Okay. Yes. So having those steps, and I think, you know, the who, the facilitator or the person that sort of asks the questions, the person that's asking the questions needs to ask those questions at the right time, and just having that framework just makes it so much easier, and you can focus on the problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You can focus on the problem. That's right. You can focus on the problem, because at this stage, we're only dealing with this part of the process. We're only collecting evidence. In fact, I had that conversation yesterday with someone because they were jumping to conclusions, and I said, no, they were jumping to solutions because we're in the evidence stage. And I said to them, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Great idea. Note it down on a sticky note so you don't lose it, but we're not going to talk about it at this point. So note it down so that we do talk about it at the right point. And that's, I think that's one of the we call it facilitator skills, or skills that the person that's asking the question needs to have, is to, you know, have the, what do you use the word, tenacity? The tenacity to say, no, we're not at that stage yet. I love your idea. Like, don't sort of, you know, put the, or put a negative, make the person feel negative because they've had this brilliant idea. Mm. In fact, could be a awesome, brilliant idea.
Could be, yeah.
We just say, no, we're just not ready for it yet.
Yeah.
We're going to come back to it.
Yeah. And just to digress for a second on that, I think what is really nice about the framework is that there is space for that. Framework that we utilize, there is space to go, oh, solution, quick, let's pop a solution in, leave it over there. We're not going to associate to anything until we're up to that stage. And then we come back to it. So you are able to actually acknowledge and appreciate the people in that.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, if in my experience, when you follow the process and the framework, right? So you concentrate, you just do step one, then step two, then step three, then step four, then step five. And, you know, you've heard the words, trust the process, like trust.
Yeah.
Trust the process. Yep. When you trust the process, I'll just write it here. When you trust the process, okay, even though, and I've been here and I've had these feelings before in the process, you're going through and you can start, I couldn't see the end. I couldn't see where it was going.
Yeah.
Okay. But trust the process. Keep on just working it through step by step. Lo and behold, we had one of those moments where we had one conversation from one question that was asked at the right time by myself in this case.
Yep.
To a group of technical people, and all of us at the same time had an aha moment.
Yes.
We can now see the path of how this whole thing hangs together, right? This whole thing hangs together, okay? And to the point, after that particular problem solving session, one of the most, I would say, he's an excellent guy, and one of the most technical specialists that I've ever sort of met in my life, actually came out and said to me and pulled me aside and said, thank you, Seven, for that question. I believe that was actually happening. So he himself thought that was actually happening.
Yep.
Now everyone else does because they can see it.
Yeah.
In other words, you've got evidence of it happening.
Yeah. And that brings me back to what we started talking about, the who. And like you mentioned before, it's not necessarily important that it's the most technical person in the room that is the one that is trained and is capable of facilitating the groups. So if we talk about who could benefit from problem solving, it's any organization. It's any organization that has a risk of incidents in investigations that warrant someone you wanting to solve a problem.
Yeah, anyone with problems.
Anyone with problems. So we could all use them for many different ways. You might not sit down with your wife and solve your, you know, personal problems with an RCA in the process and a bunch of other people, but yeah, if you want to, then go for it. But coming back to the who, so in an organization, whilst everyone could be aware of it, it's important that there are a number of people in the organization, if you want to use this framework, are trained to facilitate.
Yep.
Now, what's important is that could be anyone, necessarily the most technical, not necessarily the manager or even the supervisor. So I guess my call out to anyone listening is that if you're interested in extending the career, extending your skill base, this is a really easy and simple way in your own organization to get that, to upskill yourself and to improve your abilities and to help you understanding and maybe move into a different role in the sense that allows you to facilitate that. Because like Seven just demonstrated, your ability to facilitate the RCA, ask the right questions at the right time of the collective people in the room is what will get you a good result.
That's it. That's it. And it's not necessarily a technical skill. It's not necessarily a highly technical skill that you need. It's more of I'm going to call it a people skill. It's more of a soft, not a hard, you know, you can't sort of learn it out of a book, if you know what I mean. And you can learn it, and the best way to learn it is do it, I think.
Yes.
The best way to learn it is do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Mm. Awesome. Well, I think that's now the problem solving aspect. Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about machine learning. Mm-hmm. Now, who could possibly benefit from the use of machine learning, and who would you see as members that might utilize the machine learning tool?
Okay. Yeah, now this is a different, this is slightly a different.
Different
kettle of fish, this one. Okay. So who would benefit from machine learning? Anyone that's needs to know of impending problems as early as possible would be my answer there. So if you have some sort of responsibility, say of a process, that could be a manufacturing process, it could be a mining process, it could be the process of making steam in a power station, it could be the process of making aluminium in an aluminium smelter, and all of the above, where there's a process actually happening, okay? Mm-hmm. So in other words, a repeatable process, okay? I would say that, I'm just gonna throw this one in here. Not that I've ever seen it done before, but I would suggest that machine learning would struggle to learn off one-off type activities because there's nothing to learn. There's no history. So it sort of needs a history. So just to put that context, if it's a continuous process that
a repeats, repetitive process, something that's done time and time again.
So and again, that's aluminium smelters, manufacturing, power stations, coal mines, essentially it's a repeatable process. The miners might argue in the mining environment that it may not be absolute because there's a whole heap of environmental variables. I would agree. However, let's continue the conversation. So anyone that needs early warning on a repeatable process would, I think, you know, should be looking at machine learning. Mm-hmm. Okay. Should be considering it. Okay. Yep. Now, would they do it? Maybe not. So this is where your technical specialist, I'm going to admit now, it is a bit of a technical type process. So I've been involved in machine learning now 2 years as an engineer, not a data scientist, but as in 2 years as an engineer now, and I'm still learning, okay? Mm. And just to put on top of that, I'm not a coder, so I don't code machine learning. It's now got to the stage where it's drag and drop. But you need to have an appreciation of what we've talked about already in the previous podcast, is that the way machine learning works is it identifies difference in behavior. So it learns what normal behavior is, to put it simply.
Yeah.
And then it identifies it differently. And if you have those concepts and have the concept of how to manipulate data, okay, as I said, I'm not a data scientist, I'm just an engineer. Yeah. I don't know how to do Python or anything like that. Mm. I do know how to get data, say, into Excel and take the mean and do that sort of stuff and visualize it. Yes, I definitely know how to do that.
Yeah,
And that's habit four in the book, by the way.
Got to drop one of them in easy.
Yeah, we got to drop. You got to drop it in. Well, it's a course for a reliability person. It's a core skill, and you know, how do you make your decisions?
Yeah,
How do you make decisions? You use some sort of data.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's becoming more and more a core skill. And, you know, I'm looking at a computer screen at the moment. You're looking at a computer screen. Everyone's got them now.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, some degree of data skills and a data appreciation, not necessarily to the level of data scientists, but
yeah,
the machine learning in, you know, from what I've experienced and in my opinion now, is fair game for engineers like myself. In fact, I would even say that non-university trained people would be able to pick it up these days as well.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there on that, Seven. I think, again, if we break it down to like you said, like what organizations, not every organization would benefit from machine learning. A car yard wouldn't necessarily benefit from machine learning, because whilst there's a process to selling a car or to servicing a car, it can vary bit by bit. But if you're talking about driving trucks around a mine site or a conveyor belt running parcels to load parcels or something in a factory or warehouse, there's a process, it follows and things happen at the same time. And anywhere that you can get the data, so some of those bigger organizations and so forth can utilize machine learning to collect that data and process that data and then be predictive on failures and deal with it. Like you said, I think that there needs to be a level of technical nous that the people that are in control of that machine learning. So if we're talking about a mine site, because we both know mine sites well, we've worked on them long enough, and we both sat in that reliability role. If you were a reliability engineer in a mine, you are required to look after a set volume of machinery or infrastructure or the wash plant or the prep plant or the excavators or whatever. You've got this volume of things that you need to look after. Now currently, to do that day by day, you've got to check that their maintenances are on target, see what machines are broken down, make sure the ones that are broken down are getting repaired appropriately, investigate any issues that are coming up, and then keep on top of any condition monitoring, so vibration analysis, oil analysis, movement. Check any of the reports that come in from maintenance to note any other defects or issues that happen. So as you start to talk about it, there's more and more and more things that are happening. Now, if this was just, let's break it down to, say, your car. If you were just looking after your one car that you drive to work every day, back and forth, you're going to know when it needs a wheel alignment, because you're driving.
Exactly. You're familiar with it.
You're familiar with it. So you're going, hang on, this is going over here. Oh, this is going to the left, or this is pulling to the right. I need to. I need to get a wheel alignment.
Yes.
Now, that's great if you're the one driving it and you're responsible for that vehicle.
Yes.
Now, if we take it back to the mine site, the reliability engineer is responsible for, say, a fleet of 20 trucks.
Plus some. Yep.
Let's just say he's looking after a small fleet of 20 particular trucks. Yep. He doesn't drive those trucks.
Ever. No, that's right. Exactly.
He never drives it. So he never knows if he has to, you know, oh, hang on, I'm pulling a little bit to the left just to keep it straight. So I might need a wheel alignment. Or hang on, I need to keep pressing on the brakes a little bit harder, you know, to stop.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm not achieving the speed up this ramp anymore that I used to.
Exactly. And that's a really good example. So if they're not the ones doing it when it's in operation, it's very hard for them to preemptive or go and rectify that issue, because we're relying on people, on the operators, to actually pass that on and pass it on to the appropriate reliability engineer. In some mine sites, as you and I have experienced, there's thousands of people at the site. Yes. And the operator doesn't know, like he knows his supervisor and he tells his supervisor, but then does the supervisor know which reliability engineer to go to and tell this information? Does he have time to?
Exactly. And the thing that I'll add here there, Dane, is that with the fly in, fly out, FIFO, 7 days on, 7 days off, 2 days on, 2 days off type shift arrangements, some of these problems can be manifesting over time, and there's these really small performance degradations that are happening, you know, day by day by day. Yes. And you know, the operators don't pick it.
Yeah.
They don't pick it until someone sort of gets in there and says, oh, this thing's going like a dog. You know, and by that time,
exactly,
you know, you've missed a boat.
Yes.
So one of the things that you could view the machine learning as, okay, as if you were to put it in the case of a person, right?
Yep.
And encourage people to do this. It, you know, the machine learning is a mathematical algorithm, right?
Yep.
I'm the first person to say that. However, if you could imagine you had someone sitting there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, looking at all the gauges on the machine,
yes,
and watching that they move appropriately to the situation,
mm-hmm,
okay, and then can identify that, like, if normally the gauges do these things, okay,
yep,
and all of a sudden one of the gauges starts doing these things, like they don't operate in the same way anymore, okay, imagine having someone doing that 24/7, all of the gauges across your plant, right?
Yep.
There'd be thousands of them, right? Yep. A human physically can't do it. You'd have to have multiple humans there. And again, they physically can't do it because, you know, they need to go and have food and sleep and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Machine learning, you don't need that.
Yes.
It can sit there and watch all of the gauges. And as soon as one starts to behave just a little bit differently to what it's observed in the past, it'll identify it and tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. And I love that analogy. And as you and I like to call them, we can have supervisors that go in there and sit on that truck, you know, and do that. And that's basically what this machine learning is.
Supervises all the data coming off that truck and seeing if it's normal or abnormal.
Yep.
And if it's abnormal, bark up and say, hey, we've got a problem here, and here's where the problem is. It's this one here. It's this one.
Yep.
You know, or these three or these four that are behaving differently. And again, begin with the end in mind, righto. The people that should be interested in this stuff, righto, are the people that benefit from getting that early warning, that lead time. Lead time that a problem is about to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Certainly. And I think if you look at that in the sense of, like we just spoke about mining operations, the mines run 24/7. They're trying to run the machinery as much as they possibly can, and they're trying to utilize them as much as possible.
Yeah.
Now, if you take it out of that industry and say you were looking at farming industry, agriculture, agriculture could benefit from it too. If they have a particular tractor or a particular irrigation system that needs to run a lot, it runs 24/7. I know you've got some family on some stations and they probably have some irrigation systems that are quite remote that they need to run all the time. And if it is going to break down, or if it does break down, it takes them a bit of time to get there. So they're going to need to know early signs of it getting down.
Yes.
On the same token,
They don't know about it until they actually drive past it and have a look at it.
Yeah, exactly. They don't know about it. So, on the same token, if you are a farmer that has a nice little 50-acre block and you just kind of look after your things and it's all quiet and easy and your tractor doesn't run 24/7, in fact, your tractor only runs for, you know, 3 months of the year sporadically. Possibly not going to be worth your time to get such a thing, because if it does break down, it might not be the end of the world. You'll just go over and fix it and go about it and keep things moving. So
it's not critical.
It's not critical. But like you've got up there is that lead time. Someone that needs can benefit. I like to use the word there, benefit from early warnings, from a lead time on knowing to help them maintain or continue the process before needing to shut down.
That's right.
So yeah, I think that kind of answers the question. I think, we could get into the details of really going to utilizing the machine, like utilizing machine learning and understanding it. I think, like you said, anyone, like a reliability engineer, a maintenance engineer,
production people,
supervisors, yeah, people that actually are familiar with the machinery, even tradesmen and leading hand tradesmen. That now, like you said, everyone's using technology, like the generations coming through are more technically announced than you and I.
Absolutely.
As they come out of school, like your two boys like probably run rings around you and you're quite technically advanced. So having that nounce and then the basic understanding of what you're trying to maintain or you're trying to predict its movements and understanding, you can really benefit from that. So having a level of skill, a level of awareness is really good. And then technical skills around computing and so forth like that in the IT world is, I think, all you need to be able to use the machine learning and these particular platforms. So I think it does open it up to a wide range of people in this space.
For me, it all comes back to that difference in behavior. It's recognizing that difference in behavior of some sort of repeatable process, and if that is a benefit to you, right? If that is a benefit to you, I'd be looking at it. Like I'd be looking pretty serious at it because it's, I think the machine learning, when I first started getting into it, was in the realms of data science, right? Yes. You needed the data scientists to do that stuff for you. And some organizations did have data scientists and some organizations don't. These days, you don't need the data science. You don't need data scientists, but you don't need to be a data scientist to actually implement machine learning these days. That's probably the point I need to make.
Yes, I agree, and I think I've witnessed both sides of that too. I think data scientists, like, our roles are always evolving no matter what. Like you, I don't want to say that we don't need data scientists. I think just the tools that data scientists bring, like, to be honest, I barely knew what a data scientist was. It's not like you finish high school and you're like, what do you want to be? I want to be a data scientist. It's like more likely you're going to be an engineer, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be one of these other things. Some people know they want to be a data scientist, but often it's something that people find out through the process of going to uni, which means that data scientists, there's less of them. It's a less common thing. So it's harder to get them in, to get them to do their bits and pieces. And no doubt they're probably overworked as well.
I think the data scientists are actually going to, they're the catalyst to improve machine learning and generally taking industry and making usable products for us, the consumer, in this space.
And I think what I wanted to, where I wanted to sort of take that was the data scientists, now their roles are sort of evolving. So with the benefits of machine learning and this predictive, these algorithms that can help the process and so forth, one, the data scientist's role could be to help improve the machine learning, to help it move smoother, better and faster. Two, it could be to actually associate the faults and work on eliminating the faults or collecting data in a different way to get better predictive analytics.
That's right. And so the technology is there where you know, people like you and me now can apply machine learning.
Yeah.
Okay. And think about the 80-20 rule. That will work 80% of the time where we will nail it. And then there's 20% of the time where the machine learning won't pick it up for some reason that we don't understand because we're not data scientists, but the data scientists do. So then they need to come in and say, hey, well, it's a, you know, you use this particular algorithm here, but it doesn't pick that particular thing up for whatever that reason is. Anyway.
Yes, totally agree. So I think we've nailed down like the who can benefit. So from problem solving point of view and RCAs, any organization can really sort of benefit. Anyone that has investigations or has a level of incident or problems to solve. Who can benefit from machine learning is those larger organizations or organizations that have a constant process, a repetitive process, and that can benefit from early prediction / early lead time of failures.
Early warning. Early warning of something bad happening. Early warning of something bad happening.
Yes. Or nice and early.
Or even, you can even go a little bit. Early warning of variation.
Ah, yes.
The process doesn't necessarily have to... Yeah, no, the process necessarily doesn't have to break, but just has to vary.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So I know, coming from the aluminium smelter background, that it was really, really big on trying to keep us consistent.
Yeah.
Because if we weren't consistent, the product, you know, there's variation in the product, in the product quality and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
No worries.
Well, I think we've nailed it there. We will leave it there. We do try and keep these short and sweet, but we get a little carried away at times.
We do, but we have lots of fun while we're doing it.
We do. So, like always, thank you everyone for listening, for taking the time. We love to hear your feedback. This is new for us, so certainly any feedback, comments, and recommendations is handy. We'll be looking to have a few guests coming up soon.
Yes.
We hope you enjoy them. Like always, if you can send us a review, it helps to get this out there and so people can hopefully benefit from it. And if you want to subscribe,
helps us improve too, Dane.
It does, it helps us improve. Yep, we certainly appreciate feedback and it helps us improve what you get to listen to.
Yep.
So thank you very much everyone for joining us, and if you'd like to hear out more, you reach us on LinkedIn, you can reach us on our website reliabilityextranet.com, and comments wherever you're listening to this, watching this, or so forth. Thanks, everyone. Have a good time.
Thank you. Talk to you later.